Hello, this is Bohan here, and I am willing to talk to you about Robert Louis Stevenson, the famous author of the story Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, as well as Treasure Island. Now, before I get into it, I'd like to give you an idea of what's to come. I'd like to speak a little bit about Robert Louis Stevenson's personal life, a little bit of his background, a couple of tidbits of what might have inspired his work, and then go into an analysis of the work itself, identify a few key factors that really make the work shine as an iconic piece, and then go on to see what other works, both literature and pop culturally, it influenced in the future. To begin with, Stevenson was brought up into a Calvinistic family, a denomination of Christianity that believed in predetermined destinies and a limited amount of those who would be saved and sent to heaven when all was over in this world. His father worked as a lighthouse operator, and he wanted him to follow in these footsteps, but Stevenson clashed with these ideas. He didn't truly agree with them, and so there's a bit of conflict in his early years about that. To speak of his early years as well, Stevenson was a very sickly child and had to be isolated often for it, even getting tuberculosis at a young age, but managing to push through. At this time, too, a lot of medical breakthroughs, if that's what you want to call them, would happen. Since this was Victorian-era medicine, ether was just recently invented. And so some surgical procedures were changed and other breakthroughs were soon to happen. One thing I'd like to point out about this that makes it an interesting fact is that ether, it was a drug at the time that would inhibit pain receptors and give a euphoric sense to those who took it, basically getting rid of all the pain and putting you in a blissful kind of wonder, even though you were being cut through and stitched back together. Horrifying. This was also during that time where medical sciences and other sciences in general were kind of having some pushback against Christian beliefs and thought to go against the greater good of God. So this substance, ether, as well as scientific practice during the time, fits along the lines of Gothic literature, and almost exactly pairs with Dr. Jekyll's own concoction, a substance that lets you be free and get away from the struggles and pain of daily living. While he grew up, after his childhood, Stevenson went into engineering for university, but he did change to law school. However, he never did practice, never pursued any further than that. While he was older, he also traveled a lot, even going to the Americas and several other countries at the time. And this might have, in fact, inspired Treasure Island, as he had visited Hawaii at this time. These early years of the Victorian era had a lot of, shall we say, experimentation with psychology. At the time, it was both a physical and anatomical study, but it still had some basis that would predate Sigmund Freud, who would come into the picture later. And this study of psychology interested Stevenson. He was very touch and go about it, but he would definitely show some inspiration for it in Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. As we know, Dr. Jekyll has a opposition to morality, and wishing to be freed of it and the constraints of society would go on to create a concoction to give himself freedom from his daily duties, restrictions, and overall oppression. And so this would be shown throughout his work in Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Another thing I'd like to point out was This was just before the works of Shakespeare, as, ironically, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, being somewhat of a mystery, came before the greatest of mysteries ever, just a year published before it. Some inspirations that could have come to be formed into the book were characters such as Jack the Ripper, a real-life murderer who had went the streets at night, killing various men and women, particularly women, as they were all prostitutes, and showing that this individual had a very vile personality based on this crime scenes, was definitely an inspiration for the Mr. Hyde character, who would go into indulgence and brutality on the streets at night as well. Another very real and actually identified character that would inspire Mr. Hyde was a man by the name of Deacon Brodie. He was a cabinet maker who lived in Edinburgh, Scotland, but lived a double life as a burglar at night and would get away with many, many burglary cases before he was finally caught. Now, this sort of idea that a perfectly normal-looking man could be roaming the streets in broad daylight, smiling and being a gentleman, but secretly a killer or a brutal thief in the night, had much of England at the time, Victorian-era England, worried and anxious about who could be a friendly face and who could just be a sinister mask. And so the book plays into this, you know, the streets themselves, full of the people who might all be normal and decent folk, makes many of the background characters that are here and there mentioned seemingly more sinister than they actually are. And so this is clear inspiration and a fact that was being taken advantage of in Robert Louis Stevenson's work. At the time, too, the opium crisis was going rampant, and so people would leave their homes, leave their steady jobs, and their normal lives to go disappear into back alleys, go consume opium, and get away from their responsibilities, and therefore dabble in certain illegal facets of smuggling, drug running, gangs, you know, all these certain dead ends and scary bits that one could run into with drugs, really. And so this is another inspiration for Dr. Jekyll's plight, as he was addicted to his own homemade concoction. Now, going into the actual story itself, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde is a tale a lot of us might know, even in passing, of a man by the name of Dr. Jekyll, dabbling into science and figuring out how to make a certain serum to split the evil in his body and mind from himself, from the good side of him, and letting that run rampant for a little while so that he could be, you know, the best way to put it, expunged, to be not held responsible from his wrongdoings, and to be, quote-unquote, a better man for it. Throughout the story, too, there is much ado, much mystery about this man's outings and goings from his friend, other people in society around him, the occasional acquaintance who had known him, but throughout it, he lives a double-edged life, one that parallels between the good civil society and one that just gutters along the gutter and goes deep into the underbelly of society itself. The story of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde really is, at the end of the day, a story of morality versus repression, and the ability to avoid and balance life and pleasure as well. And it kind of has the general message that if a person goes long enough in life and doesn't find an outlet for, you know, the certain darker side of them, it can explode. Just as in the story Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, eventually After starting to consume the concoction, Dr. Jekyll becomes addicted to it. He becomes addicted to this newfound freedom after repressing it for so long that he starts to unwillingly transform into Mr. Hyde, and this causes all sorts of commotion and chaos in the streets. Until at the very end of the book, he is eventually put down for good. And so, on top of it being a moral and repressive tale, it is also one about mental illness and the psychology of desire, as having a split personality is much like that of having dissociative identity disorder, having two literal separate people in your mind. And I'd like to start that and go into what sort of things would influence or be influenced by this work. Now, as I mentioned just now, the double-edged sword of psychology in this story plays a dark role, as years later there would be psychological thrillers and mysteries, though this psychological factor would come in much later in favor of more tangible mysteries like Sherlock Holmes and other such famous works like Hercule Poirot. Now, aside from psychological mystery, there is psychological horror to it too, because in Victorian society, there had been, you know, many cases, and in history in general, where bad things would happen from noticeably bad people or opposing groups and whatnot, like gangsters versus, you know, schoolboys and such like that. But now, Victorian society had a problem and a new anxiety. There could not only just be danger physically present externally, but now there could be danger from within. And so this troubled an already very troubled society. And it kind of led the question of, well, how can one tell if a person's good or not, right? And because of this, it became a newfound, bestseller. Because as time would go on, the book itself, once Stevenson published it, would sell 40,000 copies within 6 months, which was remarkable for its time. I mean, absolutely mind-blowing, in a time when the population of any country, any city, was at least, if not less, than half of what it is now. It spread also into America, in the United States, but it was pirated there due to weak copyright laws in the 1800s, which, ironically, helped spread it faster. Unlike some publishings, it was also published in penny dreadful editions, which also continued to further spread its influence and its contact with those in the working class, who could, you know, very easily purchase a small little book for, you know, a penny or two. And also helping on top of this, compounding on it, was the fact that it was very accessibly spoken book. The language in it wasn't flowery, artistic, it was readable for the people of all classes, and this kind of helped bring it its great success and its current iconicness in the days. Also, though, on top of that, because of its success, critics were deeply troubled by its moral twistedness. While most did definitely see it as a great success and a great book with good reasons, they didn't like the moral implication it held for people psychologically and society as a whole, because at this time, people did not want to think that the man sitting next to them on the trolley could, you know, very well be a murderer or anything very vile like that. Now, to go on about the future of literature, the media in general, I would like to point out a few tropes that this book created and how those tropes evolved into certain popular media we know today. Obviously, like I mentioned before, the book influenced psychological horror, as well as, you know, it helped kind of grow mystery from its foundation as well. Of course, key to Gothic literature also, there was the scientific sci-fi genre element in there, what with the pseudoscience and whatnot of the concoction. There was also the inspiration of a doppelganger, a person who could look like another person, or someone with a exact identity. Now that trope there had been already established with fairy tales such as changelings, but this kind of brought it into a new field. No one had ever thought of using science to create someone that looked exactly like you. If they thought of a doppelganger, they usually thought of, like, fairies and stealing kids at night, right? Like, goblins and things that go bump. Also, the book kind of helped explore mental illness just a little bit, even though it wasn't, at the time, really dug into as it is now. But, you know, it's one of those things that, where at the current time, it's not seen for all of its facets, but is really dug into decades, if not centuries, later. Like I said before, too, there is the thought of the internal danger, really focused on the internal conflict of a character. And this would also inspire lots and lots and lots of literature later, with more internal dialogue and, you know, just conflict, man versus self. The whole mad scientist, along with Frankenstein trope, was established with this book as well. And on top of that, one thing that is a very clear distinction between Frankenstein and this, and also helped shift the Gothic genre, was a note of how this story shifted Gothic literature in terms of setting. Because lots of Gothic literature before would either be out in the woods, in a cabin, in a castle, far isolated away, and kept away from society. This actually just moved it into the heart of, you know, society, and was another deeply unsettling facet to the story, because it was here, it was at home, it was close, this scary feeling, you know. A lot of people who might have read books might have lived in the city, you know, and so this danger of, oh, there's a scary vampire, oh, there's a stitched-together monster, ooh, there's like a doppelganging, you know, psycho out there. That was all out there until this book came into being. Now, it also inspired a very fun trope that we like to explore a lot today, and that's the unreliable narrator. And so this kind of helped give a sense of, oh, you know, can we trust this? Do we know where to go with this in books? And just generally gave a more interesting read and more of a hook. Real quick, before I wrap this up, a couple of pieces of media I'd like to point out inspired by this are very common, very well-known pieces, in fact. Firstly, there's the movie, I think there might be a book too, but don't quote me, called American Psycho. The character, Norman Bates, doesn't have a concoction to drink of any sort, but he sure does shift from being plain Jane, business office man, to serial killing psycho. We've all heard him. A lot of people have seen Sigma videos with him on it, and anyone can put a name to the face. There's the Hulk, you know, Marvel Comics. Normal dude gets angry, turns into a big green, you know, smashing monster. Very clear there. Now, another one that I found interesting in fantasy was Gollum. For Gollum, also known as Sméagol, has a hidden internal personality from when he was a normal person before getting the ring to rule all others. And so he battles also with his own form of mental illness, trying to still be the man who he once was, but having been lost for centuries as the man, the Hyde, the Mr. Hyde he'd become. There's also in DC Comics with Batman Superman, Two-Face. It's a very clear reference there. Normal man, very classy man, goes into an accident that has relation to science. I think it was like an acid bath. And eventually has a sort of split personality disorder from the trauma, as well as physical disfiguration. Almost as if you could see the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde on both sides of his face, hence the name Two-Face. A very popular book and movie by the name of Fight Club explores this doppelganger two-sided life that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde kind of established. At day, being a normal dude, one of the boys, but at night, going down to the arena, down to the pit, and having a fight, whereas keeping those two identities separate. The whole idea, too, in general, of sci-fi, particularly of superhero fiction, is the whole masked vigilante role. Now, this takes the whole doppelganger split personality side into a lighter light, but it works, you know. Normal person, maybe dopey, maybe seemingly incompetent during the day, but a very powerful, very heroic person at night who, instead of being one with the terrors and being one with the crime and underbelly of the city, instead fights against those things. So it's kind of a reverse against the tropes that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde established. So that is my first initial thoughts of the book, and a lot of good things I liked about it. So if you're interested in hearing more, just leave a comment. Not necessary, as this is for a literature class, but hell, if you manage to find this by accident, enjoy it. Just send me a notification. Well, toodaloo.